All right, for those who have a real business interest, and obviously I do, I mean, I get a great guest on with a great book. His name is Bobby Martin. He co-founded two successful startups, one of which, First Research, was a leader in sales intelligence. It was sold to Dun & Bradstreet. That's impressive enough. I don't need to know any more about Bobby Martin. He's involved with five other startups as an angel investor and advisor, chairman and founder of Vertical IQ, a leading provider of sales research for banks. He speaks everywhere and was the recipient of the Triangle Business Journal's 2006 40 Under 40 Award. And the name of the book, The Hockey Stick Principles, The Four Key Stages to Entrepreneurial Success. And it is published by Flatiron Books. Let me just give you Bobby's website, which is hockeystickprinciples.com. Hey, congratulations on all your achievements. Welcome. It's great to have you on.
Oh, great. Thanks so much, Stu.
Yeah, let me go right to the title because, you know, as I looked at it before looking at the book, and I said, well, what's this all about? So, the first question, since we're on radio, I think people will want to know, what's the connection between the hockey stick principles and what you talk about in this book?
Yeah, sure. So the hockey stick is a metaphor for revenue growth for startups. So people who start innovative businesses of all kinds, not just tech companies, but, you know, Yeti coolers or any type of new business that, according to my study of 172 successful firms, they all took the revenue shape, or actually almost all of them took the revenue shape of a hockey stick. So it took them 2 or 3 years, low revenue and low growth, until they turned north and revenue started really taking off. And so that's where the name comes from.
Yeah, dangerous business stages here. Let me ask you first, can you give just a general overview on people should bootstrap, go to institutional investors, use angels or venture capital? I'd like to hear it from someone who's done it so successfully.
Yeah, sure. I think, well, first of all, it's an art form. So the timing by which you raise capital or you bootstrap or whatever depends on a number of circumstances. But I think that, you know, generally speaking, unless you are definitely onto a multi-billion-dollar idea, that I think bootstrapping is a great way to go, because during this stage of not spending a lot of money and kind of doing things yourself and, you know, doing things with very little money the first 2 or 3 years, and it enables you to use a lot of trial and error and figure out how things are actually going to work and basically develop a business model. So the less money you're pouring into that process, the better off you'll be. And let's face it, 99% of the founders out there of new companies are probably going to start a kind of a niche, a $10, $20, $30, $50 million idea, not a multi-billion dollar idea that you read about. So I'm a big advocate for that. Some people, when they start out, they just need $50,000 or $100,000, and that's where angel investing comes in, sometimes more. Angels, of course, are individuals who have a fair amount of net worth and therefore can afford to risk the money to help someone start a firm, and that's where angel investing comes in. And, of course, venture capital is for something that is normally a professional organization that's going to invest usually more than a few $100,000, half $1 million or more, up to $2, $3, $4, $5 million. So again, I advocate people do as much as they can for as little money as they can normally.
And make sure that if you don't want to give up a share, a portion of your business and lose, say, a control in it, you better think very carefully about doing it. But that's for specific instances. I don't want to go there. I'd rather go down this road, Bobby, and ask you what's changed since we had that huge tech crash. Yeah, I felt it too. I thought I was a genius in 2000, and I found out I really wasn't a genius like a lot of other people out there. How has the landscape changed? In perhaps we should focus on angel investing and not have a professorial dissertation on this. Let's focus in the area that you are. What are the changes since 2000?
Well, that's a great question. I think in 2000 with dot-coms companies is that many of these businesses basically got ahead of their times. And so back in 2000, they got ahead of themselves in the sense that, you know, there was there were several companies who started with just way too much capital before they went through that iterative process that I just described of learning your business model first. I think Webvan was a perfect example, if I don't recall. But what they did is they poured millions of dollars into this new technology, which is primarily internet, and their business models weren't ready for it. And then today, in 2016, well, we as a society and a business society have learned so much about the smart way to start businesses that, the quite frankly, capital's much more efficient today than it was in 2000. So I think that's one big difference. And of course, it's still a high-risk proposition, but it's more controlled, I think.
All right. I want to have you focus on the book. This is so fascinating, and the subject is so encompassing and wide-ranging that I want to get to what the essence of the book is, the four key strategies to entrepreneurial success. Then I'll feel better about talking, knowing we've covered it. So could you talk about the first one, which is tinkering, just kind of an overview as we go through these four?
Yeah, sure. And one thing I'll say about the stages of growth, too, is that, you know, there weren't that many commonalities amongst these founders because they're all so different and so unique, fascinating people, but they all follow these four stages, that's for sure. And the first stage is tinkering, which is when you have an idea and you haven't quit your day job and you haven't invested significant capital, meaning more than $5,000 or $10,000, these successful founders just toyed around or tinkered with their ideas for an average of 9 months. So that was the time frame where they, you know, if they were professional coders, they would code. Just try things. They did things very inexpensively, and there's one founder I spent a fair amount of time with who started an anti-drowning device called Seal Innovation. Well, he spent a couple of years in his basement trying to figure out how to create an anti-drowning device himself. So that's a fascinating stage, and they all went through this.
Maybe one or two more examples here, and that, which would lead me to perhaps a more general coverage of this, of people who kind of personify what you're talking about in the book, companies, and they may be big companies, you know, Amazon, Facebook, Apple. I mean, you can go on and on here. You want to pick one or two examples here who started out with a business model that certainly warranted moving forward.
Yeah, sure. There are many of them, of course. One that you may have heard of called Red Hat Software. It's a multi-billion dollar company. I spent a fair amount of time with its founder, a guy named Bob Young. And the brilliance of the business model was that he proposed giving away the software for free. And this was back in the 1996, 1995 and there. It was based off Linux, which is a software that was created by basically the software community itself. And they just created a really brilliant version of it, and they called it Red Hat. And he couldn't figure out how to monetize it. So what he did is that tinkering stage is spent a whole lot of time with the software developers and the large corporations who ultimately ended up paying big licensing fees for it. And he gave it away for free to anybody who wanted to download it. But if you wanted support, documentation, and an official version of it, which corporations, of course, would want, then you had to pay. And so it turned out to be a brilliant business model. But it was that, you know, it was that tinkering that Bob Young did that enabled him to figure that out. And it wasn't like he messed around with it for a month. It was a good solid year or two before he really discovered his business model.
I look at hockey principle number two. I don't want people to think that I'm a genius and I created these four key stages. I didn't. Bobby Martin talks about it. But the blade years, and that brings up an interesting point. It talks about going through the process and being patient enough to start a business and to get funding. And I know one of the reasons business models go out is because they're not adequately explained and perhaps they didn't write a good business plan. Bottom line is a lot of them just, you know, you can't get funding and lose money. Talk about stage two, and when is the time to pull the plug? And we may have to go into our next segment, but why don't you get this started?
Yeah, that's actually an outstanding question. I do find that the blade years, which is that stage of growth when you quit your day job and you say, oh, okay, I'm all in on this idea. I'm going to start this business. You've invested whatever money needs to be invested to start it. and then you're off and running. That's the blade ears. They, on average, they last 3 or 4 years.
All right, we're going to come back. We'll talk more about the blade ears if you need some cutting on this when we come back from a break. This is Stu Taylor. Kind of the crux of a business interview here. I mean, it's I don't know how to define it, but this is, I mean, you really want to get into pure business and real stuff and real life ongoing processes and negotiations. Read the book. Bobby Martin is the author of The Hockey Stick Principles and the 4 Key Stages to Entrepreneurial Success. It's in hardcover. You can get it by Flatiron. I know I don't say this all the time, and it's because I don't want to be discriminatory, so I'll just tell you that this book is a must-read book. You can come to any conclusions you want to come to. Bobby, we were kind of getting through the blade years. Was there anything you needed to finish your thoughts or your statements?
Yeah, well, the last thing I'll say about the blade years is that, you know, so many people rush that stage, and I think the most successful founders that I learned and interviewed is that, you know, while they were impatient, you know, Donald Trump, somebody asked him many years ago, what is the one thing you look for out of somebody that works for you? And he said, impatience. And I think you have to be really impatient on your activities, but patient while your business model is coming together. And I think that's what it takes because, you know, 3 or 4 years is a long time with little or no salary. And that's what I find is people quit too soon. They could have had a successful business, but if they quit too soon, then they never give it time to germinate. And it's not a one-year proposition normally. It tends to be 3 years.
Yeah, it's something, as you say, a lot of people don't have the patience because we've been brainwashed in the society now to seek immediate gratification of needs. You see billionaires made overnight. And it's not the top 15% of the people who become billionaires, but, you know, we're always thinking of that lottery ticket in spite of having 292 million to one odds. It's great in one sense, Bobby, because it motivates us to go after our dreams. On the other one, you have to have that balance of pragmatism. And when you talk about principle number 3, the gross inflection point, that's the time, as you say, this is your quote, it's the crucial time. At the crucial point in time, right after your business takes off, when it's imperative you make smart decisions to properly manage rapid growth, and I'm reading that directly, what about handling rapid growth? Because when they say making money can be easy through diversification, the difficult part is keeping the money you have. This isn't quite the same, but how do you make the point of knowing to grow so that you don't grow exponentially by investing more money than you need and undoing the process? How do you gauge this?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think that's where the rubber meets the road for so many of these successful startups is that you have to pour the proper amount of capital or money, venture capital, into the engine that you've created. So you've created this successful engine at stage 3 where you're beginning to take off. Some founders get too aggressive, and it's detailed in my book and several examples, but what they do is they pour all this money on it before it's perfected. So they've perfected aspects of it, but not fully, and then they end up with too many hires and just too many expenses in general and then have to shut the whole thing down, which is a shame. And, you know, I think that stage of growth, the best thing you can do, there's a book that came out years ago by Jeffrey Moore called Crossing the Chasm. It's a brilliant book, but Crossing the Chasm talks about how during this phase, this is when you're actually investing a lot of your time into your existing customers and making them really, really happy, finding out what they need. Because normally, if you can get these early adopters happy, then that'll move you fast into the early majority, and then off you go from there, and you can go after the masses. So I think timing's everything. The most successful founders are outstanding at timing.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of luck, but, you know, luck can be difficult to spot, as Thomas Edison once said. It can be dressed in overalls and looks like work. You can use that as a message if you decide to go into angel investing. Your fourth principle, and I'm glad we jumped right into this because it's giving you an adequate time to explain it, surge and growth. But you know the word that I love? Scalability. Why don't you respond?
Sure. And, you know, scalability is definitely a popular term you hear a good bit about startups. You know, does this business model that we've created, is it duplicatable profitably? So can you keep duplicating the things you're doing, the activities, if you will, and still earn a profit? That's scale. Now, a lot of times startups, it gets a little bit interesting because, you know, you see this with Amazon. It's the perfect example where they don't necessarily turn a profit, but their scalability shows that they could turn a profit if they wanted to. But they keep investing their excess cash that they're building up into more growth and more business concepts. And so they keep growing and growing and growing. And that's what successful startups do, is they pour the right amount of capital into that scalability. But the point being is that scalability means that you've created a business model that is indeed duplicatable, profitable, where everyone wins. And getting that right is easier said than done.
Yeah, I spoke this morning, and, you know, you always think about the difficulties. You can have a great service, a great product, but, you know, in the medical professional, you got to have the clinical trials. You got to get the funding. I mean, you got to have a person or people in there who can handle it a lot. I just spoke with someone, a friend of mine in the West Coast, just before going on air this morning, 15 minutes before going on air, who's starting a fund. He's raised $250,000. It's a revolutionary medical fund. I don't have more details and have time to read the synopsis. He's getting another $250,000 in funding today. And people have to realize that it's just not magic. It doesn't always work that way. At what particular point do you say, you know, sometimes it's better to be on the outside looking in on the inside of trying to get out. When do you say, you know, I don't want to jump here? Because everybody's got a great idea that's going to revolutionize every industry. And it doesn't mean that every business should be invested in. Got about
yeah,
1 minute.
That's a great point. Is it? Well, there's one of the principles in my book says there are no good ideas. And the point there is that, most of the success comes from execution. I mean, Wayne Huizenga, you may know, he owned the
Blockbuster.
Dolphins, right, and AutoNation, and Waste Management.
I was going to say the big waste management system. Amazing, yep.
Yeah, he's a brilliant businessman. But, you know, Peter Drucker, the great Peter Drucker.
The guru.
The guru says management is about doing things right. And I think it comes down to that more than anything else, not just the idea. I mean, when Huizenga started waste management, it was not considered a good idea.
Oh, I hate to end this. I could go on forever. You're fascinating, Bobby Martin. And stay on, Bobby, as we come to a conclusion. The hockey stick principles, the four key stages to entrepreneurial success. It's a must-read book, and I'm delighted to have had you on. I want to thank everyone for listening. See you back here tomorrow. This is Stu Taylor.